Right at the beginning, I want you all to remember the hymn Holy, 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 and Isaiah, which was read by Linda, about how he sees Holy, Holy, Holy is the Lord, and how he feels like he's got unclean lips, and it's too much for him to comprehend God, because God is so holy. We'll get back to that, and if I don't get back to that, remind me about it. This is important. How many of you ever had the experience of someone who knows nothing about your work telling you how to do your work? Yeah, right? Everybody's had that experience, right? Here's Jesus. Jesus is a really good carpenter. I mean, let's just assume that Joseph taught him really well. He's a carpenter. And he tells these fishermen who'd been out all night and who are now mending their nets, tending to their equipment, as any trade person knows, they got to tend to their equipment, right? And he tells them, go out to the deep water and let down your nets. And Simon is like, Master, we've been at this all night and we haven't caught anything. But if you say so, oi, landlubbers. All right? It's like, it's this amazing thing. He says master, but it's kind of like, okay, boss, you know, like that. And so they do it, and they have, and this is, and what happens is this great catch of fish, right? And this catch of fish is this, it's not just about the fish, but it's the sign, because there's this book that's in the intertestamental period that is Second Baroque, and it has this sign that when the Messiah comes, the earth is going to give forth all of its fruit. It's like there's this great line in it that says, in those days, if one grape breaks, you might drown. If there's so much juice in it, it's so wonderful. This is the way nature was supposed to be. This is the way God created it. And in those days, nature will provide everything. And this catch of fish is this incredible example of, whoa, wait a minute, something important is going on here. The time of the Messiah may be at hand. So, I tried telling somebody about their trade that I didn't know anything about. It didn't work out the same way. So, this is years ago, and I'm a new pastor, and I'm really wanting to make a big impression on people, a good impression on people. And there's a bunch of men out in the front. They decided they were going to put up a brand new sign. They were going to build a stone wall, 4 feet high, or 5 feet high maybe, and 8 feet wide, and they were going to hang a sign on this beautiful brick wall sign. So they're out there, and Paul Kelly, who's been a stonemason since the time of Jesus, is there, and he's out there doing it, and he's got all these guys, and they're helping, they're making the cement, and they're doing all the things that you do when some are just leaning on a shovel, but they're out there. I walk out to check things out, see how things are going, what they're doing, and all this. They said to me, well, Pastor, what do you think? Yeah, yes. I kind of thought that was their mistake, but really it was mine. Because I said, well, I think. Well, I said, well, that's, yeah, but, you know, I kind of wondered if you guys would have doing, alternating bricks, like so that you could put a brick here and then one in between in the middle. You know, it's like a different style or something, and you could. I was babbling just like I am now, and you could just see the body language in the guys. We tossed our pastor a softball, and he totally whiffed it. What is he doing? And they just kind of, they didn't know exactly what to say. They kind of looked at their shoes, like their shoes all of a sudden became really interesting. and they said, well, you know, I think this place is good. You know, they were up, you know, a couple of layers of brick, and they had to tear it all down. And they were like, no, I think this is all right. And I said, well, you know, we really want to get it as pretty as we can, right? I know. When you're in a hole, stop digging. That's the first thing. Anyway, So, and finally, Wisham Tweedy, who was the old soul, an elder of our church, he kind of just wandered over to me and he took me by pushing me away from the other guys because he didn't want them to hear what he had to say. And he said, "Now, Pastor, Kelly, Paul Kelly, he's not a well man. And, you know, he's doing this for us, but he's not well. And it's going to get hot out here. And I think we ought to just let him do what he knows how to do because he's been doing this a long time. And I think we should just let him do it." And like as soon as that he said that, I started speaking of drowning. I just drowned in shame and embarrassment for these words. Right? Of course we should. Yes. And so I was like, I just mumbled like, "Okay, you got very good." And I just got out of this. But I was just, oh, horrible. It was just terrible. Drowned. I'm going to get back to that story, but what it reminded me of was in my internship in Colorado, we were had the opportunity to whitewater raft the Arkansas River, right? And it's a big river, and there's a lot of whitewater. And you go down the raft on these big rafts. Y'all know what I'm talking about, these big round, yeah, okay. All right, so, and we're going, and we're heading up to quarter-mile rapids. So it's quarter miles worth of rapids. And the first rapid we hit, pow, I get bounced right out of the raft. And the guide is like, "Hold on to your paddle, hold on to your paddle." I'm trying to hold my life, you know. And I grab the paddle finally, but and he's trying to get over to me. But at the same time, he's got another thing to worry about, which is to keep the people in the boat safe and get the boat through, right? And there's a way you can do it, and there's ways you can't do it, and you can't go. And I'm going the ways that the boat can't go, because he's yelling at me, feet down river, all right? Because you're supposed to, you got to have your feet down there so you can fight off the stones or the rocks that you come to. But he didn't know that my dad used to call me, testadura, which is hardhead. But even so, feet first. So I'm doing that. I'm hearing him, and I'm hearing him yelling at the people in the boat, and I don't know if he's yelling at me or at them, but down we go. And he comes up to me a couple of times, and I can't quite reach him, and then I'm down in the water for a while. I'm like a diving duck, you know. I disappear, and then pop back up downriver, and down and pop back up. And it's pretty dramatic. And it feels like it's going pretty fast for me, but Virginia reports to me that it was going really slowly in the boat. And so, anyway, finally, we get to one spot, and I hear him saying something like, "Top, top, top." And I'm, what is he talking about? And then all of a sudden, there's the eclipse of the sun, and the boat, boom, lands right on top of me. Which is really brilliant, because now I can orient. Right, I'm on the bottom of the boat in the water, going like this, and I wander over to the edge of the boat, and then here we are. We get in, except it's not over because then he doesn't say anything. He just keeps saying, "Paddle, paddle, paddle." So I get back on and I join in with the boat. All right. So when I tell you that because I want to connect that up to where we're going in this story with Peter, with Simon Peter, which is this. I will make you fishers of people, right? And I want to make it very clear. He's not talking about fishing for people to get them into the pews on Sunday morning, all right? He's talking about fishing for people who are lost in the rapids of the river of life, all right? This is what he's talking about when he says, "I'll make you fishers of people." Church, you are fishers of people. And it isn't about populating the church. It's about getting them out of those things that they're drowning in, right? So there are people who are drowning in the white water of shame and embarrassment and guilt, right? There are people who are drowning in an ocean of oppression. There are people who are drowning in all kinds of stuff. Loneliness. Fear, anxiety. and they're drowning. And so the church is being called to be the people who will go after those folks. And some of us are drowning here and are in need of what the church has to offer. What ordinary folks like you and me can offer. So now, back to Paul Kelly. After that horrible incident, I get a call from his wife, Claudette. And she says, "Pastor, Paul would like to talk to you." Exactly. I knew it. You know, I'm there like 6 months and I've screwed it all up. And so she makes an appointment with me. I go to their house. We stand in their kitchen. Claudette's talking to me about a lot of different things and just kind of chit-chatting like you would. And then she looks up and she says, "Kelly, I think you have something to say to Pastor." And this man says, "Pastor, we've been in this church 25 years. We were charter members. And we have supported every pastor that's been through here. Some have been good preachers. Some have been good at pastoral care. Some have been good at other things, but we've supported them all." And in my mind, I'm saying, until now. And he says to me, and I want you to know that if there is ever anything you need, you call us. You call Claudette, you call me, and we will do everything we can to get you whatever you need. We want you to know that we're going to support you like we did all the others." Talk about getting dragged out of white water of shame. Ah, I just was like, "Oh, thank you. Thank you." That is this man reflecting the gifts of the church. It's like this guy landing that boat of forgiveness right on top of me. Orient this way. We got you. We're supporting you. We love you. We're for you. Oh, that is the freedom that I think comes from the belovedness of God. He just handed it right to me. This ordinary stonemason. So, when Peter says, after this great catch of fish, and he understands what it is, and he's like, "I am not holy, holy, holy. I am a sinful man," is the translation. But what he's saying really is, it's not like sinful, I confess that I am in bondage to sin and cannot free myself. Peter doesn't have that in his head. He's got in his head, "I can barely keep kosher, let alone keep the rest of Torah. I'm just an average guy. I don't go to Jerusalem 3 times a year. How would I do that? Who would do the fishing if I went to Jerusalem 3 times a year? I'm just a Joe Blow. And why is this happening in front of me? I am not holy for this. This should happen to the priests. This should happen to the Pharisees. This should happen to the holy people. Not me. I'm just an ordinary person." And that's when Jesus says, "Don't be afraid." Like, I'm not interested in holy, holy, holy right now. I'm interested in ordinary. I'm interested in you, Simon Peter. I'm interested in you, Paul Kelly. I'm interested in you, Eugene Ramos. I'm interested in you, Greg Kelly, Greg Pusey. Harmony and Greg both died this week. And they both were kind of ordinary men. If you knew them both, you'd think, wow, what an odd couple to die in the same week. Harmony is just this kind, gentle soul. Just. And Greg was a curmudgeon. Right? I mean, just, I think, lovable curmudgeon, but holy mackerel. Gentle soul, not so much. But both. And like harmony with his gentleness of spirit. You're with him for a while and you can kind of feel your heart start to beat a little slower. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, what a gift this is. And Greg, you know, he never really entered the church. He just wasn't interested in coming to church. But he served the church, took care of the grounds of the church, you know, made sure things were functioning around here, made sure when there was water floods and stuff, he took care of all of that stuff. He was committed to that. But there's more. This curmudgeon of a man, he worked up on 25 Mile Creek and took care of houses and stuff of very rich people and some people who were pretty spoiled. And there's one person who just, who was incapacitated and couldn't get to Wenatchee or whatever. And what did she do? She would call Greg. Greg, could you come and take me to Wenatchee? And he'd drive all the way out there, pick her up, take her all the way down to Wenatchee, take care of whatever it was. And then, while we're here, Greg, I've got some more, I've got some other things I got to do, some errands I got to run. Could you? Oh, sure, yeah, got it. I'm taking her all through Wenatchee. How about if we have some lunch? Yeah, right, I don't have anything else to do, Greg would think. Sure, lunch, okay. And this person who, by accounts, you really wouldn't want to serve. Right? Like, you just wouldn't want to. And yet, this ordinary guy is reflecting this beautiful service to somebody that nobody really wants to serve. It's pretty stunning. Ordinary people. Paul Kelly, Simon Peter, Harmony, Greg, all of you, me. I mean, when both of these men were dying, and I was invited in to be a part of that experience, it's like, I am a sinful man. What am I doing in this holy territory, on this holy ground? And God is saying, don't worry about holy ground. I will worry about holy. You are being called to do something. Go do it. And don't worry that you're an ordinary person. Do it. And in it, God will bless, God will hold, God will bring you to the fullness of that messianic time. Because that's really what the time of the Messiah is, right? The earth will give forth of its fruit, and the church will give forth its fruit, its fruits of accompaniment, its fruits of compassion, its fruits of forgiveness, its fruits of hope, its fruits of love, its fruits of belovedness. Ordinary people. Called to do extraordinary things. And like St. Paul says, but not us who do it, but the grace of God that does it. And that great line, he's talking about how he was least of the apostles because he persecuted the church. And then he says, but by the grace of God, I am what I am. And God's grace to me has not been in vain. And God's grace to you is not in vain. You ordinary, wonderful people.